from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We're going to get on down now.
We're talking all things Atlanta sports and beyond. This is The Morning Shift.
Make some noise!
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Woo! Bring them out, bring them out. Bring them out, bring them out.
We are in our 7 o'clock hour of the morning shift, and it is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean. All right, September 8th is almost upon us, and that is when the Falcons have their season opener at Mercedes-Benz Stadium against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and there are some rosters floating around in this studio, some fake GMs in this studio.
Wannabes.
That, you know.
Wannabes.
Wannabes.
Okay. You know
what I mean? And they were expired by Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who set his 2024 53-man roster projection for the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah. We talked earlier about, obviously, the offense and kind of the breakdown and how many running backs you can expect, how many wide receivers. We both kind of settled on, you know, Mark Raimondi had 5. I think we both kind of think there will probably be 6 wide receivers in the end. But when you get over to the defensive side of the ball, there's a lot more roster math to be had because you and I both agree, Bo, that I think there will be probably 27 kept on defense as opposed to the 23 we have offensively.
I think it's where the most. I think it's where the toughest decisions have to be made. And I think
where do you want to start with then? Position group?
Hell, I don't know, Tiffany. I'm telling you, let's just go from the front to the back, but it's not easy because
look at some of the names that he has on this list, and it's
And every position group is deep, it feels like.
Well, let's take the defensive line then. Obviously, Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, Zach Harrison, Taquan Graham, Eddie Goldman, Kentavious Street, Rook Arororo, and Brandon Dorlus. Both of those two guys, recent draft picks.
In a vacuum, Bo, I'm not sure that Brandon Dorlus did probably enough without the draft pick next to him, but obviously you want to see him develop. He showed enough upside in preseason where you feel good. Rook Arororo comes on late, but otherwise, I am on the fence still about Eddie Goldman. I know that listen, we've talked about him more on the show about retiring than we have on-field, kind of prowess when it comes to that. But he's so unique in what he brings to this team. He's different than any of his other defensive linemen. So I'm erring on the side of I think Eddie Goldman gets back in the fold and is part of this lineup because I think he's different than anybody that they've been able to have up front the last couple of years.
Well, I think if he would have not been a guy they had penciled in on the roster, they would have tried to see more from him during the preseason.
Yeah.
Like, I think if he – that's where you – know, I heard someone comment yesterday, or I saw someone comment, well, Eddie Goldman's out. He hasn't done enough in the preseason for me. And I wanted to I didn't go in because I'm like, well, what do you mean?
What did he do during the preseason?
What did you not see for him during the preseason? You know what I didn't see? I didn't see him active.
Yeah, I didn't see him play.
And I think to me, if you're not playing a defensive lineman who is in jeopardy of not making the roster, then you're going to play him. Why would you sit him? So to me, the only question I have, because I think Mark is right. I think it's Graham, Dorlus, Harrison, Goldman, Onyemata, Arororo, Street, and Jarrett. The question I would have is, do you keep a 9th? And take from another position? I don't think you do, because I think the 9th guy to me would be Laquelle London. But I think Laquelle London's a guy that you have confidence in, you can see on the practice squad.
Yeah, you used him back and forth to the practice squad last year. I think they're safe with that.
So when you look at the linebackers then, Matthew Judon, Arnold Ebiketie, Lorenzo Carter, James Smith-Williams, Caden Ellis, Nate Landman, Troy Anderson, J.D. Bertrand, and D'Angelo Malone. Is that going to hold up?
Whew.
One.
Your guess is
two,
as good as mine.
Three, four, five, no, six, seven, eight, nine.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of linebackers for eight spots. D'Angelo Malone obviously being the X factor. I think that he showed, and I'm going to be friendly here, showed very little in terms of what he brings as an outside linebacker throughout preseason, and he did play. But my gosh, Bo, I mean, you watched the same things I did. If he's not the first guy down on every special teams play, then I don't know who is. I mean, he's absolutely lightning down the field in coverage units, which we talk all the time, can make a team for you. But usually it has to come with a little bit of experience and ability in that linebacker role before you flip the page of special teams. It seems to me at this point right now, a lot hinges on whether or not they keep him. And I think that he obviously finds a role somewhere in the NFL if they don't. But, man, it's hard for me to look at four linebacker spots and keeping nine out of those spots. The addition of Matthew Judon is really the X factor throughout this whole thing.
So well, is that a position you could take away from and add to?
No. Okay. No, you have to. Here's the problem is we're talking about them as their linebackers, but they're edge rushers, yes, as well. And so I think, to me, what I would say is, did Damone Harris do enough to say you'll find something that you don't need D'Angelo Malone special teams prowess, right? That's where the question is for me, because Lorenzo Carter is a guy that I've seen throughout his time here, 2 years here, play a lot of special teams and do it well. So for me, it would be, do you still? It's two things. Did Malone do enough on special teams to knock Damone Harris off the roster, or did Damone Harris prove enough on defense as an outside backer to knock from, to steal from another spot?
Yeah,
that's the question for me. I think the 80 has are pretty solid, but I think you make a case to knock Malone off for Harris, or just add an extra spot for Harris.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, let's go to your cornerbacks. A.J. Terrell, Mike Hughes, D. Alford, Clark Phillips, Antonio Hamilton, and Natron Brooks. What are you doing here?
Yeah, no, I think Natron Brooks showed enough during preseason. He might have been the best player in preseason that we saw throughout those games. I think Natron Brooks and his performance in week 2 of the preseason, electric. He looked like a starting caliber corner in the NFL. I'm not sure that any other position or position player defensively looked quite as good, save for maybe Donovan Mutton, you know, from that last preseason game where he makes, you know, 18 combined tackles. But Natron Brooks, to me, flying downhill, reading the offense, being able to step up and make plays, he was physical. I think he deserves a spot on this roster. I think if he did not, that you'd have, you know, a dozen other teams lining up, raising their hands, saying, hey, we'd love to have Natron Brooks here on our roster.
So, Raimondi has – oh, go ahead.
No,
you go.
I don't necessarily agree with Mike. I agree how good Natron Brooks looked. I'm afraid he's a guy – that you also think, because you look at it, he was on the practice squad last year. I think he might be back there this year to start the season. Because I think what Kevin King showed you is he can play so many positions that he can also play that outside cornerback spot. And I think his versatility, along with Antonio Hamilton's versatility, might have knocked Natron Brooks off the roster, not to mention you look at Clark Phillips, and if Mike Hughes is starting at a spot, Mike Hughes or Clark Phillips, if AJ went down, would be the other side starter. So it would depend on who won that job. So I think that could keep Natron Brooks.
Let me ask
off.
You this then, because Mark Raimondi has Kevin King as part of his safety lineup.
Yep.
So then who are we adding back to the roster if you think Kevin King knocks off Natron Brooks? Are you keeping Mike Abernathy?
Well, that could be
Dane Cruikshank.
He also said Anthony Johnson would be a tough cut, but not everyone can.
Yeah,
I make it. Well. Those I were his words.
It was that rough?
I think Brooks to that. I think Brooks would make it over, but he has Brooks on it. I think that Kevin King's a guy that you look at that, you know what, I can get a plethora of things from him. So maybe I keep Damone Harris, or maybe I keep a third quarterback. That's where I hate doing this. I hate these words. I hate these. That's where the roster math comes into play, buddy. But that's it. Like, that's kind of what it is. That's kind of where you start looking is, are you robbing, what is it, Peter to pay Paul?
Right, yeah.
That's what you would be doing if you want to keep that
Attaboy,
third quarterback.
Wordsmith over there.
I was like, that's the correct
way to use
that expression.
I know my expressions. Look at me.
No, but I think you're, yeah.
That was
I think
a big
you're
phrase.
Right. I think the problem therein lies, and this is what we were just talking about, the Natron Brooks. You said, I think he probably lands on P-Squad at some point. He was there last year. Again, and I will say this time and time again on these cut days, he might end up there. They might be a P-squad guy, but I definitely think as a guy who's not vested and a guy who has opened some eyes in preseason that Natron Brooks in week one should be on that 53. Now, week two comes around and all that money, you know, the guarantee for the veterans you can call up and everything else, then you can move more pieces around. But I think as you're kind of suiting up and going against Pittsburgh Steelers and you're making all these moves based off, you know, vested and everything else, I think Natron Brooks is on that roster.
Let me go to safeties. I don't think there's a lot of questions here, but Jesse Bates, Justin Simmons, Richie Grant, and Kevin King, that is who Mark Raimondi has.
I don't know. I didn't see a lot from that Justin Simmons guy in the preseason. I'm not sure if I can keep him on my roster.
I mean, I said I didn't think there were a lot of them. There's always a question. What am I talking about?
A lot of dead cap hit.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I mean, I think Grant, Bates, Helms and Simmons, Helms will be on the IR, but then I think Simmons is in, and I think Antonio, that's where Hamilton, to me, and King, they slide around. That's the thing about the versatility of those guys and what you can do differently with them. That's why I think you maybe could be a little lean on the defensive backfield to start the season.
Yeah, and you also, Dane Cruikshank didn't play as much in the preseason. I think he did have an injury. Mike Abernathy did play, you know, some snaps for you last year. Again, I think you can probably sneak him through. Kevin King was a guy who came in, obviously familiar with Jimmy Lake from his history and was at Washington, I believe, together, and can do some different things. So there's just no right or wrong way. You can say 27 and 23 can be the split. You can go as far as 28 and 22 if you don't have a quarterback. So a lot of things left to be played out.
What we're not going to do here is disrespect special teams. Mm. So I am going to mention who Mark has. And, of course, your kicker, Youngway.
Did Youngway make it?
Oh,
man,
there.
I was scared because he missed those kicks against the Ravens. I didn't know. My mom
punter,
cut him.
Bradley Pinion and your long snapper, Liam McCullough. There we go. Special teams.
Biggest punter in the NFL, B. Pinion.
Boy,
he is. He is. He's a big dude.
Special teams, special plays, special players. Shout out, Skip.
Oh, I thought you were. Like, I thought you were Terry for a minute. I thought that was a cut.
I thought he was playing a drop, too.
Whoa.
Yeah,
wow.
It's not an arrogance. It's a confidence.
Matt Olson is carrying a confidence. Big hitter. Blasting the Braves past the Twins. We'll discuss next. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Good morning.
Yeah!
Back to more of the Morning Shift
with Tiffany, Mike, and Bo on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Another 0-2 to Olson.
Oh.
That ball is hit high and deep to right field, and it is long gone. A three-run bomb for Matt Olson. Four batters in. It's 4-0 Atlanta.
Brandon Godden on the call. You heard it there, courtesy of Bally Sports. And Matt Olson coming up big early on in the ballgame as the Braves ended up powering right past the Twins 10-6, the final score.
Yeah, Max Fried starts off the game, pitches well, comes back in after the delay, got touched up a little bit. I think Bo and I are at odds. I did not like the fact that Max Fried re-entered the game after a 90-minute rain delay. And at one point, you had sirens going off all over the place. But nonetheless, a good offensive night for the Atlanta Braves, getting back on the offensive side of the ball. Matt Olson with the home run you just heard. And also Travis d'Arnaud with a ball that, like we said earlier, wound up in one of the Great Lakes. I'm not sure where it landed, but it was somewhere up there in one of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I just didn't think Max Fried looked that. I don't think he touched up is a little unfair. He's had some fielding behind him that wasn't up to par with Arcia, which started with the throwing error, which started with where the guys got on. That's why that he only allowed one earned. I have no problem with it. He only threw 70-some pitches. I think he is fine. I think you need to take care of that bullpen as much as you can because you got six more games with the Twins and the Phillies, and they're pretty good teams.
All right, let's shift gears now. We're going in the huddle.
It's time to huddle up.
Bring it in close. Bring it in close.
The latest NFL news, rumors, reports, and happenings.
Within the Huddle on the Morning Shift.
Big, big news going into the week. And Dallas Cowboys receiver CeeDee Lamb, the holdout is over. He agreed to a four-year, $136 million deal, and that makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. So the deal includes $38 million signing bonus and the largest ever given to a wide receiver and $100 million guaranteed.
I got one word for y'all. Woo! Get that man his money.
Deep pockets.
Golly, boy. No, and this is what he wanted. This is what he kind of envisioned in terms of his Cowboy future. I think this is also what Jerry Jones envisioned. This is why Jerry was like, man, we ain't in any hurry.
Nope.
That man his money.
And Jerry said he's qualified for the job to be able to negotiate.
Here's my biggest takeaway, and you guys can agree or disagree. I think that if you were going to make a decision about Dak Prescott moving forward, that he has to have every weapon at his disposal, and you have to make sure they are happy. So if you're going to make that decision next year, next offseason about Dak, you better make sure CeeDee Lamb is part of that fold and part of that process, and now he will be. And shocker, this is a good football team, dude. Dallas is a good team who the Falcons will see later this year.
Yeah, they are, but there's just so much uncertainty about them, and I'm not – I don't know. How much will the loss of Dan Quinn affect their defense and the way they were able to play the last few years?
Fair question.
And they still have
– Mike Zimmer's pretty good.
It's not a doubt, Mike Zimmer. It's about the fact that team played a certain style of football with Dan Quinn at the helm of the defense, and it was what won them a lot of football games.
It's it's a well-established coach, right? Everyone knows who Mike Zimmer is, but it's still a different coach coming in. So I think it's a fair question just to ask, hey, new guy coming in,
fair, sure.
How are they going to play?
The quarterback going to make business decisions when he's back in that pocket for his future? There's still an edge rusher they're going to have to pay as well. So I think you took care of one guy, but there's still two other guys that are about to get paid. If it's in Dallas or not, I don't know.
Let's just stop right there, and I just wanted just an inkling, and both y'all can weigh in, or you want, or Bo, whatever. Do you think Dak Prescott is there next season?
I was going to ask that question.
I don't.
So if you say you don't, then you're saying that they lose in the playoffs again this year. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, either that or they don't go 12-5, and it's a 10-7 second round exit or whatever. I don't think they win a Super Bowl this year. Just I'd say that hey, we're not a Super Bowl, and I don't think Dak is back there. I think you're starting to give out money in these other positions. I think they have more belief in Micah Parsons and CeeDee Lamb and the offensive lineman they had to pay and other things. To where I think they think.
Well, you better figure it out.
So let's not forget the families weighing in on Dak for your receivers out there. You had Micah Parsons, not even receiver, but Micah Parsons. Some of his fam taken to Twitter to voice their concerns over the quarterback. I think CeeDee Lamb's mom.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that look down the road, Carson Beck, Dallas Cowboys, 2025.
Dak's a good quarterback. For some people, you know what? My photographer out in Paris was a Dallas guy, and he was saying he's worn out. Basically, his welcome in Dallas. They're tired.
Oh, you want to run Dak? But that's.
That's the nature of where he is playing.
Somebody will give him $60 million a year, and it'll happen. But I just don't think
fresh start might be needed for him.
I heard a New Orleans cab driver tell me the same thing about Drew Brees. The problem is, you don't want to get Carson back. You better be willing to trade your entire draft capital for the next 2 years, because that's what it's going to cost if Carson Beck has any kind of year like he did last season.
I agree.
You're giving up everything to get him.
All right, let's move along here. Green Bay Packers coach Matt LaFleur, after their preseason finale, he kind of made some comments that alluded to the fact that their backup quarterback might not be someone who was already on the roster. And then here you go a few days later, and they traded for a 2025 seventh round draft pick to the Tennessee Titans for quarterback Malik Willis. He's expected to be the backup behind Jordan Love this season.
Well, and I think that when this news comes down, everybody in Atlanta kind of looks at Taylor Heineke and wonders if this might be something in a situation that you could see for him. I mean, it's not nothing, but it's next to nothing. A seventh round pick for Malik Willis, it's next to nothing.
Well, I think they might have overpaid still. He might have been out there.
Somebody of comparable value.
If he's worth a seventh, Taylor Heineke's at least worth a fifth. At least we can recoup a fifth, right? We can get that fifth back? I mean, come on. If Malik Willis,
Sleep on that man. But, yeah, I tend to agree with you.
All All right, Juju Smith-Schuster name was back in the headlines. So he was the leading receiver for the Chiefs' 2022 Super Bowl championship team, and he was in uniform practicing with the team yesterday. That's because they were able to reach a deal, and that comes from ESPN. So he was left after the season as a free agent for the New England Patriots, signing a 3-year, $25 million contract with the team as one of their primary targets. And then that was, of course, under the Bill Belichick regime. So, but anyway, back with the...
I think it's a perfect landing spot for him.
Staying with the Chiefs.
It's a perfect situation, right? I mean, Juju's a guy that can be so polarizing, but you're so established with your leadership, with your coaching ranks in Kansas City. Obviously, they have, you know, kind of a... It's not as hard-nosed as a New England or Bill Belichick, but it is very much a, hey, you're going to do it our way, and we do things the Kansas City Chiefs way, even though that way can be a little crazier than other places at times. It's a great situation. He's still a good player. He does have some juice left in the tank,
yes.
Some juju, if you will.
And familiar with them already. So
yeah.
You were there, you left, you came back.
Kadarius Toney's on the bubble for them. I think it's just one of those things where they need playmakers out wide. They haven't had great wide receiver core. Obviously, last year, that offense struggled because of that. So you go out and draft Xavier Worthy. Bring back Juju Smith-Schuster, and then you can kind of make decisions from there. So,
a former Bulldog is going to be starting the season on the PUP list, and that is the Cleveland Browns. They're expected to leave Nick Chubb on that list. This is what sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter, which means the running back will be inactive for the first four games of the regular season. He's been rehabbing a severe left knee injury that he sustained in week two of the 2023 season, and that sidelined him for the rest of that year. It required two surgeries, so he underwent the first procedure to repair the medial capsule meniscus and MCL in late September. Then the second surgery occurred in November, repairing damage to the ACL. I sounded like I had a medical degree there, even though I can't fully form words right now. So,
yeah, I'm a little bit surprised. A little bit, but then again, you because Nick Chubb was, we've got videos of him working out, doing the squats and everything. But look, it's completely different when you're out there and how your knee will respond to with that kind of injury. And it's not his first one. I hope he's back after four games. I think this it's going to add extra pressure to Deshaun Watson and Jerome Ford and maybe even Deontay Foreman if he makes a roster. I'm not sure where his standing is as well, but I love Nick Chubb. I don't know how you can't. And he's a local kid. He's just a freak athlete. So I hope he gets back healthy. I don't love all the Cleveland Browns players, but Nick Chubb I do love.
They, the Browns expect him to play this season. They've not given a timeline. And in late July, GM Andrew Berry said Chubb has a little ways to go. And days before his comments, that's when we did see all those videos of him doing sprints and lifting the weights.
I mean, this is obviously his second major knee injury, and everybody, Georgia fans have tracked that. Everybody that's been able to track Nick Chubb's career, it was incredible that he came back from the first one and has gone to four Pro Bowls, and it's going to be twice as incredible if he comes back and is even remotely the same Nick Chubb. But we're all rooting for him because everything you hear about Nick Chubb, great dude, great player, great teammate, and you never want to see it go down like that, man. So hopefully he's able to bounce back, head back into that roster, and make his status known.
Stay with us here on the Morning Shift. Later on in the show, we are giving away a pair of tickets to Atlanta United's home match against Nashville on Saturday, September 14th at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, which the game is at 7:30. Tickets are on sale now at atlutd.com. You can go try to purchase them there or stay with us here on the show, and I will tell you when to call in to try to win those tickets. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. What you got for Mic'd Up?
Tiff, did you know that college football season started? There was a game on Saturday. Did you know what happened?
I had no idea.
You were not in attendance for that game over in Ireland. College football season is here. We're going to do a Top 5 Tuesday. Top 5 college football matchups coming up this weekend. We will dive into college football. I'm so excited. Morning Shift rolls on. Mic'd Up and Bo, Sports Radio 92 on the Game.
Mornings on the Game means more of the Morning Shift.
Nice.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
As a former offensive lineman, how much pride did you have watching that group control the line of scrimmage?
Are you kidding me? Run the ball.
run the ball. That was Brent Key talking to ESPN's Katie George after they stunned the Noles in a late game comeback, 24-21 in Ireland.
Run the ball.
Offensive line.
Which I got
so
to be
simple.
On the hand for that one as a fan in the crowd. So pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
You offensive line.
And I know that you were locked
proud.
In on the offensive line play, Tiff. I know you were. I know how your personality works. I know
so
that you were locked in.
I always talk to the linemen when I have games.
Yeah, a bunch of belly slapping up
the
front.
Smartest
you know
people.
A bunch of big guys blocking for a little, a bunch of fast guys. You know what I mean? So that's how it works up front. Obviously. Did not get a chance yesterday to give a tip of the cap to Brent Key in the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Tiff, obviously, like she said, in attendance for it. But, man, that ground game working with Haynes and Haynes King, obviously, you know, I'm such a fan of that offensive line. My guy Ethan McKinney, not part of that group, had a little injury in training camp, but good group up front full of guys that were trying to get it done and willing to get it done from Florida State. On the flip side, didn't love Florida State's offensive attack. DJ Uiagalelei, I don't know if they need to run him. I don't know if they need to run him or if they need to, you know, change something offensively.
The
Florida
passing was
not good.
And you can credit some of Tech's defense for that as well. But you expected more of a guy that just, I know he's hopped around Clemson, Oregon State. Getting to find a place at Florida State, you kind of expected to see a little bit more passing-wise because the passing, I got to pull it up, but the passing attempts, I was like,
it was rough.
It was,
well, 13 of his 19.
The stat was abysmal.
Yeah, 13 of his 19 were under 5 yards or under, which is, that's the epitome of dink and dunk. They couldn't run the football. They lost the Florida State is sitting at 0-1 today because they could not win the line of scrimmage against Georgia Tech on either side of the ball.
Credit that offensive, you know.
I mean, either side of the ball. Well, hell, credit the defensive line.
And credit the defensive line as well, both sides,
A bunch of lump bumping going on in there, belly slapping, whatever you want to call it up front.
Easy, you know what? Just
Calm down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, you're using some phrases, and you know, just
you got a former offensive line, you know, guy as your head coach, and then you got your line turns out big. And by the way, just want to give you that note: it's Tech's first win over a top 10 opponent since a 22-16 victory that was back over the Noles in 2015.
Mm. So. All right, I'll take a deep breath, Bo, if that's what you want me to do, because let's hit the top 5.
Run the ball.
It's time to rant.
Excuse me?
It's time to rage.
It's time for Mic'd Up.
On the Morning Shift.
Brought to you by the Lexus Golden Opportunity Sales Event.
Top 5 Tuesday, real easy, man. It's week one college football season. I'll give you the top 5 matchups, not for the season, just for week one. Don't want to go too far out over my skis right here and get too far down the slate because there are a number of great games this weekend. I probably would have had Georgia Tech, Florida State. It would have probably been in top 5 if Georgia Tech, Florida State would have been this weekend. However, a full slate of games moving into the weekend. I'll start with honorable mention. We'll go Western Kentucky at Alabama. Honorable mention just outside the top 5, Western Kentucky. The Hilltoppers going to Tuscaloosa. See that show down there. So. Good with that.
I thought you were gonna. You know, I got a little game. I got a little game.
I thought I was gonna get some.
No,
push
I thought
there,
you.
But I was just
no,
joking.
I thought.
Western Kentucky.
I've seen
no,
the Hilltoppers several times.
It's awesome.
I'm not even gonna respond.
He's ignoring his. All right.
Well, it's all
just,
good.
It's just ridiculous.
Let's start from the top.
Number 5.
How about this one? Starting off noon on Fox in Morgantown, West Virginia, Penn State. The Nittany Lions head down to play the Mountaineers noon on Fox. That's number 5. This is an interesting matchup, man. I don't know what Penn State and how they kind of fit in terms of that new Big Ten, that new look Big Ten. It seems like Penn State's always been that team that's like right there around 3 or 4 in the Big Ten. As all these other teams get kind of added, though, you're like, how far do they slide?
How far
do they? Do they fit in with the USCs of the world?
They're better than USC at this point.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Oregon is the one that would be the toughest test for Penn State to stay above.
I'm going to agree with. I mean, I saw Penn State. I mean, you can't just base off one game. Saw them in person last year against Indiana, the game that they almost lost. And I
should have probably.
Yeah.
Drew Aller back in the fold as well.
Somebody, I can't remember who said it the other day, but I think it might have been McGee. Somebody said that James Franklin, the 12 team playoff was built for James Franklin, and I honestly,
that's a really good point. Man.
I honestly 100% because how many times has Penn State been in that 8 to 12 range the last
category?
Like 7 to 8 to 10 years? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of pretty accurate.
All right, let's move on.
Number four.
This one's interesting to me for a lot of different reasons. Notre Dame, if anybody's paying attention, will be headed down to College Station to take on Texas A&M. That's your primetime ABC game on Saturday night. Notre Dame against Texas A&M.
That environment.
In a battle of really weird fan bases.
That is accurate. Having had to attend and cover Texas A&M games in my career, yes. But the atmosphere in Bryan College Station is nothing to mess with.
Yeah, I agree.
And the Notre Dame fans though travel well, so I'd be interested to see how that one plays out.
I know. I feel like that's a game that Notre Dame fans very much are like, you know what? Let's just go.
We
check it out.
We got to be there for.
Let's just go check it out. And then I think Texas A&M obviously opening up the season with that
new head coach.
Caliber of a home game. Yes, Mike Elko down there.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Riley Leonard play at Notre Dame and see what he can do, because I think they have the best quarterback, but Mike Elko kind of knows how to play him. So
that'd be interesting to see how that pans out as well. All right, let's move on.
Number three.
We've talked about it a million times, that Florida schedule this year, and we're going to put Miami at Florida 3:30 on ABC. We're going to put that at number three right now. We've talked about the fact that Florida has winnable games earlier on in the schedule. When you go kind of like weeks one through, what is it, five? And then that's when the gauntlet kind of hits. This is a sneaky good game, though. This is a couple of teams that really need to establish an identity moving forward. It seems like the NIL era should be for these two squads. But nonetheless, you don't know what Billy Napier's squad is, even though I think they're probably better than they were a year ago. Miami, kind of the same way. I don't know what to expect out of Miami's team. But Florida Gators, nonetheless, need to get it done.
Yeah, I think this could probably be one. Because I think it has a chance to be the most competitive of all these games. Billy Napier does have his best team that he's had. And Mario Cristobal apparently has hired a time management coach to stay on top of him so he doesn't
just
blow it.
Just want to relive that.
Yeah.
You had to bring that up.
Hey, I don't know how much he's making, but I can save him some money. Hey, hand the ball off? No.
Here's the thing I'll say.
Just kneel on it.
It's a new season. Don't bring up the past.
Kneel on it.
Here's the problem for me. If Florida wins, it doesn't mean they're back. And if Miami wins, it doesn't mean they're back. But one of these fan bases will say, "We're back! We're back!"
Yeah.
Miami does it every year. Every year they go 1-0.
Your team needs this. They have the toughest schedule, right? Yeah. So it'd be a great way to start things off if you get a win over Miami.
Yeah, well, if you're going to win six games, you better win it before October 26th, okay?
Let me ask you this really quick before we move on. The winner of this game, best team in Florida? Winner of this game, the best team in Florida.
It's week one.
I'm just saying,
Well, they will be until Florida plays UCF on October 5th.
Yeah, you could say that. That's fine. That's fine. Okay. That's fair.
All right. Let's move on.
Number two.
This one comes around, and this is one of the things I love about this opening week one. This one's actually 7:30 on Sunday. You're going to get LSU facing off against USC in Las Vegas, baby. I am all about this matchup. I want to see what LSU is on a defense that needed to be revamped but is not revamped. And a USC team minus Caleb Williams, but does return the quarterback that threw, six touchdowns back in the bowl game. I think Lincoln Riley usually gets it done with just about anybody being the signal caller. But this, to me, just feels like with Garrett Nussmeier taking over the helm down at LSU, this just seems like a game that scores a lot of points, even though both of these teams graduated Heisman Trophy winners a year ago. So I don't know what to think, but Sunday, love the fact that we get a Sunday primetime game. Labor Day the following day. LSU, USC just feels like Vegas.
Just feels like Vegas.
Can USC handle the trench play that LSU has? Because Lincoln Riley's teams are traditionally softer up front, and they have been extremely bad up front since he's been at USC.
Yeah, I thought that LSU would go in the portal, and they did not get there. Remember, Brian Kelly comes out and says, "Well, we want to develop these guys. We're not just going to get just anybody out of the portal." Well, you didn't get anybody, and now your defense that gave up 30-plus points a game is back in the fold. All right, let's move on.
Bring in UK.
Number one,
you know what it is. It's going on down the street, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. No need to make a big deal out of it, but Clemson against Georgia just feels right. Thank you, college football gods, for putting this back on the schedule.
It's been a minute.
I know. I love this matchup. I love this game. I think this game is just perfect. I wish that this was an annual non-conference rivalry, much in the way. But, Georgia's already got the Georgia Tech thing going on. But this one just feels like in 2024, it just feels like a bigger deal. Say what you want to about Dabo. Kirby, look, I'll be shocked if they don't get the trifecta, which is the Heisman, the first overall pick, and the national championship down in Athens. But Clemson is going to be hungry, and that one's just down the street.
And you're getting a team that's already at the height of everything, which is UGA, against a team that was at the height of everything for years. And there's a lot of questions
Collision of multiple dynasties.
Yes.
Collision of multiple dynasties.
That's how you could phrase it.
No?
Yeah, I think Georgia's going to roll them. I don't. This isn't not the best game of the weekend. It's one of the games you want to put the most eyes on it.
You want to watch the top team.
But I don't think Clemson gives any.
You think
any,
Miami and Florida are at one?
Huh? Yeah, I think that's going to be the best game. I think this one's going to. I think Georgia is going to. Georgia plays well in Mercedes-Benz. Kirby is really good at these season openers. He puts the emphasis and knows that everyone's watching. I think they boat race them.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe you
William Byron's going to be upset at the end.
Well, I'm going to give myself my own little plug. I've got UCLA at Hawaii. That's at 7:30 on CBS. So I got another 10. I have a 10-hour flight. On my schedule.
What you call a make it all back game when you're a gambler because you done lost it all day and you get to that.
You get to that
Hawaii game. You're like, please, gotta make it all back.
Anyway, all right. Wake up call is next. That was your mic'd up. You can weigh in on Mike's top games coming up this weekend of week one of college football. Give us a shout at 404-726-0929. The wake up call is next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.